don't have a poster anywhere. There's no posters anywhere.
No, it didn't. It's called the Enigma of Succus.
What?
It's called the Enigma
of Succus. Title of the share buy. I don't have any posters.
I've got one on my phone.
No,
I've got one on my phone.
No, they're not anywhere. I wanted to do the, what's it called?
I've got one on my phone. Do you want to see on my phone?
What?
It seems to be on my phone.
Torahway, Northwest London, first day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos, or Rav Malcolm Herman Schlieter, Sukkos Enigma. This week's Torahway has been sponsored by Family Moss on the 13th Yahrzeit of our dear friend and participant, Mr. Yossel Moss, Rabbi Yosef ben Rav Avraham, Zichrono Livracha.
I haven't been here for a while. When I used to live in Whitefield, up in Manchester, we lived in a small cul-de-sac, and half the cul-de-sac was Jewish, half was not Jewish, some were half Jewish. But anyway, and at that time, we didn't have much space in our back garden, but we had quite a large front drive, so we always used to build our sukkah. In the front drive. Now, I was always quite conscious. It was a bit of an eyesore, a small cul-de-sac. Our house was the second house as we came in, so I tried very, very hard to take it down every year straight after sukkahs. One year, I'd sprain my back marginally, and it took me a few days to take it down, a week or two later. I'm taking it down, and my non-Jewish neighbour across the street says to me, oh, I'm so pleased you're taking it down. So I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry, I apologise. It's been a bit of an eyesore. He says, no, nothing to do with that at all. It's fine. I said, so what's your problem with it? He said, I've noticed all the years you've lived here, every time you put that structure up, it rains. It doesn't stop raining until you take it down. So Baruch Hashem, this year, we've been zochah so far to wonderful weather. And I want to share with you, if I can, a maimor of Rav Huttner. I say if I can because I can't claim expertise in Rav Huttner, but I find that when one is zochah to unravel Rav Huttner, you get a new dimension, a new understanding, not only of Ma'amore Chazal, but of one's Avodah. And I think this is particularly true of this particular maimor. And it revolves around the idea of Ma'ase Ovos Siman Labonim. We know, established, that everything that is in the Torah, everything that happens, the prototype took place in the days of the Ovos. They established the core principles, they established the plan, and then everything plays itself out. And if we ever find a reference back in the lives of the others to something later on in Torah, then it's our responsibility to understand exactly how one is linked to the other. And there's a unique reference with one of the others and Sukkos. What's the reference? Well,
Yaakov.
The Yaakov Nosa Sukkosa. Nothing what? Yes. But it doesn't say sukkah. Here you've got Yaakov Avinu is on his way back from the 21 years with Laban. He is now post the encounter with Esau, and with great diplomatic skill, he manages to negotiate with Esau, so Esau goes on his own journey. And then, finally, having relieved himself from the company of Esau, the Torah tells us, Esau goes off on his way, for Yaakov nosa sukkosa. And Yaakov travels to Sukkos, for even though Boyes, Unamigneo, Osa Sukkos, Al Kain, Kara, Shame, Amokam Sukkos. So Yaakov travels to a place, and because he sets up these various sukkahs there, therefore the name of the place is designated as sukkahs. Rashi, in fact, points out that he was there for 18 months. He was there for chor of kayetz, etc. He was there for 18 months. But there seems to be a unique and specific connection between Yaakov, amongst the others, and the Yom Tov of sukkahs. In fact, as Rav Huttner puts it, the Shorish Kedusha of sukkahs has got to be somehow embedded in the life of Yaakov. And that, Yemitz Hashem, is what we're going to investigate. Let's start a little bit further back. By the way, of course, today is the Ushpizin of Yaakov. So all appropriate. Now I know why Dudi managed to persuade me to move from Thursday to Monday. Kedarka Bakodesh. But today's Dush Bishniv Yaakov. Let's take a step further back. Because we're going to show there's a fundamental difference between the Middah of Yaakov and the Middah of Avram and Yitzchok. But let's begin with Avram Yitzchok. Avram, of course, his Middah was Chesed. And Yitzchok, his Middah was Gevura, or Yira. So Avram was Chesed, Ava. And those two middahs are really diametrically opposed. Whilst Ava is about extending beyond oneself, whilst Ava, if you like, is a middah, an extrovert middah, Yira, on the other hand, Gevura, is about withdrawing within oneself. It's fascinating, we know less about Yitzchok than we know about any of the others, really, about the life of Yitzchok. Yitzchok is about Gevura, is about within, is about self-discipline. In fact, one can even ask, what was there, as Rav Huttner does, that linked Avram and Yitzchok? What was there that linked Avram and Yitzchok? In fact, the Leitzoni Hadar maintained there wasn't a link between Avram and Yitzchok. For so many years, Sarah and Avram were not blessed with children, and Avram, Sarah gets abducted by Abimelech, suddenly she becomes pregnant, and then we find that Yitzchok is born. So the Leitzoni Hadar made a slur on the genealogy of Yitzchok. It seems to be just a petty slur on the genealogy of Yitzchak. So much so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged it that Yitzchak looked like Avram, and everybody said, oh, Avram only did this Yitzchak. What was this? What was this particular aspect of Lashon Hara that they said? So, in fact, Yitzchak and Avram, in terms of their core middah, bore no resemblance to each other. What was it that united Yitzchak and Avram in the fact that they both became the Avos HaKadoshim, they both became the Avos of Klal Yisrael? It was that in every middah that a person operates, there is always two dimensions. Let's take the easy example, which is the example of Chesed. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Avelus, the fact that when a person performs the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim, or other such mitzvahs, so a person is then learning from Avram, but learning from Avram in the realms of Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha. Then in fact, even though the actual mitzvah of Bikkur Cholim you won't find in the Torah per se, it's a mitzvah Midivrehem, but it is the representation, or it is the practice of Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha. So it will come under the heading of Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha. But the Rambam also brings the mitzvah of Chesed, of Avram, and the act of Chesed of Avram somewhere else. He brings it in the end of the first chapter of Hilchos Deos. The end of the first chapter of Hilchos Deos, which talks about emulating the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, he then brings Ma'hu Rachum Afatarachum, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gracious and merciful and kind, so we too should be gracious and merciful and kind. And that's V'alach HaMidrachav, following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here again, the Rambam cites Avram Avinu, who promised, whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu observed, would teach his children to follow the Derachim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, Avram's Chesed hits two targets. One target, it hits the target of Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha, but the second target is that it emulates the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in so doing, brings people, Tachas Kanchesh Hashkina, it reveals the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this earth. In fact, the same is true with Yitzchak. Yitzchak had a middah of Yira. Now, the middah of Yira Shemaim in and of itself is a middah chashuva. The middah of self-discipline, the middah of control in and of itself is a middah chashuva. But also, although it's more complex, and Rav Huttner explains it, also, in fact, the middah of Yira also emulates HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's actually curious, if you think about it for a second, because of what can Hashem have fear? But Rav Huttner elsewhere has quite a long analysis. In essence, the Yira is about stopping. Yira is about holding back. Yira is about restraint. And we see when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Misha Omer La'olam Odai, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exercised restraint. So when a person exercises restraint, they too are emulating the Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what did Avram Avinu share, and where were they different? Avram and Yitzchak. Where they were different was in their core personalities, in their dominant middah, they were completely different. One was Ava, one was Yira. What they shared was in their common goal. In their common goal was they wanted to utilize their middahs to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to teach people to emulate the ways of Hashem. And therefore, the Leitzoni Hadar, they weren't just slurring the genealogy. They weren't just telling Lashon Hara about whether Yitzchak was Avraham's son or not. Well, for them, it was the ideology as well. It was the ideology as well, because they didn't believe in a Borei Olam, because they didn't believe in any greater goal or greater purpose. So they wanted to detach Avraham from Yitzchak and say there was no real ideological relationship between Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham had his way of going about life, and Yitzchak had his way of going about life. What they denied was the Lachta B'Drocha. That's what they denied. And that's why it's so important that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself gave the shtempel, that the Borei Olam himself made it such that Yitzchak and Avraham were clearly cut from the same cloth and clearly had the same aims. Everyone declared Avraham holid es Yitzchak. That's by way of intro to look at the midas of Avraham and Yitzchak. But Yaakov stands alone. Yaakov, even amongst the others, is in his own unique stratosphere. Because the Gemara in Chulin tells us, Gemara in Chulin, Perigid Anoshe, which details the Yaakov and Sulamus of Arutza, and it says as follows: then the Melacha Yadakim are only beyond the boat. Tala Olin umistaklim b'diyukin shalmala. They ascended and they looked at the image above, beyond and umistaklim b'diyukin shalmata, and they descended and looked at the image below. And as Rashi says, there was a resemblance. Parts of Adam shem abachios, but to Musa Yaakov, whatever it means, on the kiss Yaakov of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. On the various representations there, the one representation of the human image had the representation of Yaakov. Not of Avraham, not of Yitzchak, but of Yaakov. So Yaakov's own image, his own face, has some kind of resemblance in the kiss Yaakovod, which neither Avraham nor Yitzchak had. In other words, Yaakov, in that respect, stands alone and beyond Avraham and Yitzchak. Beyond Avraham and Yitzchak. And therefore we have to understand what was the difference between Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov. And I'm going to say it as Rav Hutner puts it. And at first it's going to sound quite enigmatic. And then, but I think, and you'll tell me if you agree, I think I've got a moshul which is going to explain it much more clearly. But I'll tell you what he said first. He says that really, Avraham's middah, we know, was chesed, Yitzchak, was Gevurah. But those two middahs were limited. As Rav Dess also explains, both of those two middos have their limitations. We know that chesed has its limitations. You can go too far with chesed. Sometimes, it's not always what appears to be a chesed, is not a good chesed. You can be too liberal, too lax, maybe with your children, or too liberal, too lax with somebody else, it's not really a chesed. Gevurah, of course, can go too far. Gevurah is too far, it's too tough, it's too demanding, it's too exclusive, it sets the bar too high. Both of those have limitations. In fact, and these are Rav Hutner's enigmatic words, obviously the others had this role to bring Hashem into the world, predominantly they exercised their middah, and through their middah, as a result of that, they then were Megala Kavod Shemayim, brought Hashem into the world. So in other words, for them, dominant was their middah, and through their middah, they then revealed Hashem in the world. Whereas Yaakov was the other way around. Yaakov, in and of himself, had a resemblance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because he had that resemblance, then he used the middos to exercise what he needed to do in the world. For Avraham and Yitzchak, the middah was the Av, and the resemblance was the Tolda. I'm going to explain it with a moshel. But for Yaakov, it was the other way around. The resemblance was the Av, and the middle was the Tolda. Moshel. See if you agree with this moshel. I was thinking about it a lot. You've got a cabinet minister. I've forgotten these days half the names of cabinet ministers as they change here and there. Cabinet ministers. Now, the cabinet minister, let's say the educational minister, in essence, his or her association with the government is driven through their responsibility. Why do they have an association with the government? Because they're the transport minister, because they're the minister for education, because they're the minister for culture, whatever else there is. So their association with the government, their resemblance, their representation of the government, comes through their responsibility. But the prime minister is different. The prime minister, it's not a specific responsibility that gives the prime minister the right of government. The prime minister is government. The Prime Minister is government. He has an overarching global responsibility to be government. by virtue of the fact that they are government, they then have to exercise certain and discharge certain responsibilities. That's the difference. Through Avraham and Yitzchak, it was in essence their responsibility of Avraham and Yitzchak, which was theirs, and through that they then brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. Whereas Yaakov, in fact, didn't have a middah per se. MS isn't a middah. MS is overarching. MS is balance. MS is the application of each thing in the right time, in the right space, in the right measure. That's what MS is. MS is more global. And so Yaakov, in my moshel, was the prime minister. Yaakov represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world in a way that the other of us did not do. And therefore Yaakov is the one that has the schus of the mustiyuknu being on the kisei hakovet. That's why Yaakov, whilst Avram's midah was taken to an extreme by Ishmael in a negative direction, in a corrupt direction, and Yitzchak's midah was taken to an extreme by Esau in a negative and corrupt direction, whereas Yaakov's sons were all wholesome. Because Yaakov had that wholesomeness that wasn't limited in any respect by the particularity of a midah. Yaakov himself represented the closest one could be to mustiyuknu of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this world. Now, so, thus far, part one, his first yesod. Fascinating. And that's why Yaakov, and only Yaakov, merits to have the mustiyuknu. He has this overarching, this overarching ability, or this overarching flexibility. Yeah, that fits. Of course, and MS, as we know, Aleph Mem Tov, Aleph travels all the way through. There's no limitations to MS, on the contrary. MS is the correct application of every other midah. Therefore, there's no imbalance with MS, on the contrary. That's what MS is. MS is balance. So it's interesting, I've never thought of it before. It doesn't define it as a midah. It's not a midah, on the contrary. It's greater than a midah. It's greater than it. It's simply the representation of whatever is needed, when it's needed, how it's needed, whenever it's needed. I don't know if you agree with my marshal. What do you think of the marshal and the prime minister? I think it's quite a good marshal in terms of the difference between the two. Now, let's come now to Sukkot, the second Yesod. The Sukkot, we know Gemara in Sukkot, Yud Aleph on the base tells us two reasons for Sukkot. Either Sukkot's mamish, or Anani HaKavod. Anani HaKavod. Now, we tend to think, certainly in our early days, that Anani HaKavod is Anani HaKavod that we received when we came out of Mitzrayim. But the Vilna Gaon says differently. The Vilna Gaon, based on a pasuk in Shear Shum, pasuk Aleph, Perek Aleph, pasuk Dalet, Moshchini Acharecha Narutza Hiviani Hamelach Chadorov Nagilem Nisvachavach Naskir Dodech Miyoyin Meishorim Ahivucha. Basically, the pasuk is talking about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu drew us close, and we ran after HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We ran after him into the Midbar. And we rejoiced in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we expressed a sincerity of love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On this particular pasuk, end of the pasuk, Vilna Gaon says, this is a reference to the Anani HaKavod, with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu embraced Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. But the Vilna Gaon says, it's Dafka, the Anani HaKavod, that returned after the Maaseh Egel. It's not the original Mark 1 Anani HaKavod that brought us out of Mitzrayim. It's the Anani HaKavod that returned after the Egel. Now, why is the... And of course, that coincides because they returned 5 days after Yom Kippur, after Salachti, and therefore Sukkot's Mamash is the anniversary of the return of the Anani HaKavod. Rav Huttner takes it a little bit further. There's a fundamental difference, of course, between the first Luchos and the second Luchos. The first Luchos was smashed. The first Luchos were not eternal. Whereas the second Luchos were forever. The second Luchos were for eternity. And therefore, in fact, when we're talking about the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as represented by the Sukkah, and that love represents an eternal protection, that love represents a protection that is beyond any damage, it can't be linked to the first set of Anani HaKavod. Because the first set of Anani HaKavod were dissipated after the Egel. The first set of Anani HaKavod disappeared after the Egel. It can only be linked to the Anani HaKavod that are connected to the Brit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was eternal. Right? If the Sukkah represents the eternal protection, Shema Amo Yisrael La'ad, the eternal protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're saying the Sukkah represents Anani HaKavod, it can only represent the Anani HaKavod that were permanent. And that's the Anani HaKavod that represented the second bris of the second luchos, which were therefore permanent. Now, so now we have two themes which are beginning to coincide. Yaakov Avinu has a permanence. Yaakov Avinu has a universality, universal application in all circumstances. And Sukkah has a universality in all circumstances. Now, let me share with you something I once shared here before in a totally, totally different context. But I think it's going to be a very good way of bringing together what Avner is saying. If I was to ask you, when you think about success in any field, a successful Maravitz Torah, a successful Talmud Chacham, or success in another field, a successful businessman, or a successful sportsman, there's a key component to what makes up success. A key component. And I would suggest, and we're going to bring a chazal for this if time allows, a key component is consistency. Temidus. As the Medrash says, the Medrash brings, there's always a debate between the various Tanoim as to which Pasuk represents what's called a Pasuk Kodol, some kind of overarching Pasuk. Obvious candidates, Ben Zomis says Shema Yisrael, Ben Nona says Vatarecha Mocha, and Ben Pazi says, as Akeva says Echa Tasa Boker, as Akeva says Sheini Tasa Ben Avoy. Consistency. And in fact, interesting expression, the Medrash finishes off by saying, Halachaku Ben Pazi. Consistency. You have these people that are a flash in the pan. They're successful for a while and then they disappear in any sorts of field. But success is consistency. Temidus. We know that those who are shy to become Gedolei Yisrael and look back on their career, it's that temidus. That's what Hatzmada is, temidus. That consistency, come thick or thin, in every single circumstance, they're there, they're at it, they're motivated. That's what success is. What is the key to consistency? The key to consistency is actually adaptability. It's actually adaptability. Because life circumstances often change, will always change. If I want to remain consistent and maintain my standards under all circumstances, I've got to be adaptable. And the easiest analogy is on the sports field. A sportsman or a sports person that's consistently good is adaptable. Because the turf might be different, the surface might be different, the opponent is different, the weather is different. They've got to be adaptable. In any field, so somebody is successful, obviously you need extra siyata shmaya in business, but you also need to be, your status needs to be adaptable. The economy changes, the market changes, technology changes, you need to be adaptable. I always tell our team of educators that when you're giving a shiur, remember that your audience is communicating to you the whole time. Your audience is a book. Read the book, you may need to be adaptable. Take this out, put this in, shorten this, out of that, adapt. So it's very interesting because consistency to me this is the key to success in Ruchnius as well. But the key to consistency is adaptability. It's got to be adaptability. And therefore, if we think about it, when we want to, we've just been through the Yom Noroim, where we have set ourselves the highest of goals. And we've been through this rigorous process, Slichus, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. It's rigorous. It's very demanding of us. And in fact, it's quite regimented in terms of what we're expected to do. And then we're told, Tzei midiras keva. If you want to now move forward to the next stage of your avoda, you're going to have to let go of some of the fixtures. Because we pass Kansukah diras arai b'inon. You have to let go of some of the fixtures. You're going to have to be more adaptable. You're going to have to be more global. You're going to have to be not so limited by a particular middah or a particular place or a particular style. You're going to have to be able to transcend the constraints of life if you want to achieve true success. And that was the link. And that is where Yaakov specialized. That's what we're saying. Yaakov specialized that he didn't have a fixed middah. He didn't have a middah which he specialized in. On the contrary, Yaakov represented simply the Ratzon Hashem in this world. And whatever was required to achieve the Ratzon Hashem, he was adaptable to do. And that's what MS is. It's a correct application of whatever is necessary in every circumstances, not constrained and not confined by any particular midah. This isn't Chas v'Shalom to suggest any weakness in Avraham and Yitzchak. This was the development of Klal Yisrael's history. And that's where Yaakov brought it all together, bringing the chesed of Avraham and the gemurah of Yitzchak, but giving this overarching and global nature to it of the emes, which is the adaptability. And that is exactly the same as what Sukkot is all about. We're saying over here that Sukkot is for all time, as the Vilna Gaon says. Sukkot represents the Anoni HaKavod, which was a bris, a krusala oilom, for all time. If it's going to be for all time, then it has to teach us that adaptability. Because if we want to maintain our standards in the year ahead, we're going to have to move away from our diras keva, move away from our fixtures, move away from that which has constrained us in the previous year, and demonstrate that we can maintain our standards under all circumstances. Where do we learn that midah from? We learn it from Yaakov. Yaakov Nosa Sukosa. It's rooted in who Yaakov was, and it's rooted in how Yaakov operated. Therefore, in fact, that is the link, according to Rav Hutner, as to why Yaakov particularly, as he puts it, the Kedusha of Sukkah emanates from Yaakov. That's the only way to achieve that permanence and the permanence of consistency, which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but the maintenance of the standard of consistency. Now, to me, as I said, if one is zeichet to unravel Rav Hutner, which I hope we've done, not only do you get this unbelievable ability to see Mamore Chazal and how they all slot together and give this whole new dimension, but you also get something new in Avodah as well. You also get something new in Avodah as well. In many respects, I feel that the whole, as we move towards the end of the Yerach HaEsonim, what's happening is that we are being held less and less. First, we had all the structure of the Yom Minorayim, and then the whole day in Shul Yom Kippur, you know exactly what to do. And then it's the same in Diras Keva. Okay, loosen up a little bit, go outside and see how you perform. And then, of course, we have the Amrei Minim, and then ultimately Shemini Atzeres. Shemini Atzeres, Hashem says based to us, okay, you're on your own. You're on your own now. Now you're absolutely on your own. I've taken you to this point in time. Can you still operate? Can you still maintain? Can you still keep your standards now that you're on your own? And that all prepares us for the winter ahead and for the avodah ahead. And I think that's so important in one's own avodah. Let's take avodah of midas. I hope it's not just me. Occasionally I have struggles in midas. I'm sure I can't think of the screen. Probably no such thing. Anyway, but in various areas I have struggles in midas here and there. But it's so true, if you want to maintain midas, you have to be adaptable. You have to be adaptable, because so often our midas challenges are triggered by external stimuli. Only if we can be adaptable, okay, that normally irritates me, but I'm going to take a step back. I can normally handle that. That's it. One has to be adaptable to maintain the standards of one's midas. One has to be able to show that ultimately I'm here for one reason only, that is to serve the Rabbanu Shlolom. And if I'm going to maintain that under all circumstances, I'm going to have to take the midah of Yaakov and the midah of Sukkah and that combination to the year ahead. I'm finishing one small episode, which I particularly like. I heard this in the name of Rabbi Orlovsky. Rabbi Orlovsky, I'm sure many of you know, one of the Baal Teshuva world's great educators. My friend, Rabbi Edwards, heard this from Rabbi Orlovsky. He had a student that was particularly difficult to connect with. So he thought he was going to give the student a real, real challenge. So he said to the student, can you imagine if Chas v'Shalom you had only one week of life to live? I'd like to know how you plan. Go away for a few days. Tell me how you plan your last week of your life. Quite a challenge to a thinking student. So the student went away and came back a few days later. Oh boy, what an itinerary had he created. He was going to fly to the best restaurant over here and then take a flight somewhere else to experience this and that and the other. All planned out, down to the last minute, down to the details. Had it all planned out, the final week of life. Then he turned to Rabbi Orlovsky and said to him, tell me, how would you live your final week of life? So Rabbi Orlovsky said to him, I would live it the same way as I lived this week, the same way as I lived last week, the same way as I lived last week, the week before. Because that's what's life all about. It's not about these flash-in-the-pan moments or these once-in-a-life experiences. It's about maintaining that consistency of excellence throughout life. For that, that's what Sukkot is all about, rooted in Yaakov, to teach us the adaptability in order to help us maintain the standards that we all are aspiring for in the year ahead.